from a methodological perspective, and I think anybody who's here and didn't know this hasn't done their homework, I am not a Bristler. That doesn't mean that I don't think that there is room for conceptual interpretation. I think there most certainly is. I think it's a very important tool. But I do not think that the text is secondary to conceptual interpretation. And I believe that good Lundus has to be rooted in the text. It can't be in between the gaps when it's not really there. Or to quote a particular line, most of you won't know where this comes from, but perhaps a line someone I deeply respect but I could not swallow was once told vastly about a certain particular idea in the Ramban was that it's latent in the text. You should never say those words in my presence unless you want me to put that. So, but I think that this is really a crucial nakuda. I also think that the most, other than I'm a Talmud of a Shechta, I know this is a complicated statement and I don't take this literally, but the purpose of learning is it is very valuable, especially in learning brachos. That's why the Rav introduced this and part of our three Seder rotation. It's not like regular, most yeshivas never open Zerayim or brachos or moed or anything like that. They learn seven mesechtas. Gush is eight. I mean, the American yeshivas are certainly atypical, but as a standard yeshiva, Har Etzion is exceptional. That's probably a little bit the Rav's influence through Lichtenstein. So they also do things beyond the standard seven yeshivish mesechtas. So I think that's very important when you're doing halacha, because this is something that you will take with you every single day of your life. If you were to ask me what I want you most to get out of learning and to be able to do, is to take a look at a text. And most of it we do through the Rishonim. If you have a machlokas Rishonim, I want you to be able to explain what in the text is creating this. What are the pieces of the puzzle that the Rishonim has to put together? And they come up with different solutions because it all depends on how they arrange the pieces. Sometimes it's how they arrange the pieces. Sometimes it's which piece gets primacy and which piece kind of just gets, you know, shunted to the side. But that is what Rishonim did. They engage with the text. They engage typically with multiple texts, either multiple pieces of one sugya, multiple sugyas, and had to put them, and when there were apparent, at least apparent, maybe not real contradictions, they had to do something. Some Rishonim, some of you may be familiar, that the method of the Gaonim and the Rambam and the Rif, but not the Palihatosos and not later Chachmei Sfarad, is that when you saw a contradictory Gemaras, very often the response was, it's a machlokas hasugyas, the end. That's no fun, right? The Balei Atosis' method was almost to never find a contradiction they couldn't resolve. Even the Balei Atosis sometimes talk about sugyas machlokas. These are different approaches to dealing with texts of Chazal, but we study the text of Chazal, not always, but most of the time the Rishonim are our eyes onto the text. And that's what I want you to be able to walk away with when you have a focus on Rishonim. What is driving this particular issue? What is driving each of the shittos? Okay. Now, I asked one of the things that I asked you in preparing, and I don't know if all of you got to the end, just to the two dots. I asked you to look up every parallel Gemara. Now, that is always a very, very good method. Methodologically, you always have to do that. You always have to put the other sugyas. The Mesoros HaShas will give you them. The Rishonim will often give you them. I remember some of you, most of you, a few of you may have heard the name of one of my rabbinim, Rabbi Leibel Dulitz, Zichrono Lebracha. It was a rabbi named for a very long time. For some of you, if you have parents who went to MTA, I think they're still, some of you are, I'm getting older every year. But oh my God, I'm really old. I'm really old now. But Rabbi Dulitz is the Chorah Levracha. So he was a personality. He was a character. I wouldn't be standing in front of you if I hadn't met him. And I am subsequently the next year Rabbi Torsky, Mayor Torsky, who was his last year in MTA. Rabbi Dulitz. So I don't remember him saying this, but Rabbi Taubes at an askara that a number of us spoke at. So He recited that Rabbi Dulitz said that I explained to you all the Gemaras, you know, that Tosis is going to quote, because I know you're not going to bother to look them up. I think that was something along those lines. Rabbi Dulitz said it sharper. And so it's really important to look up the parallels. Sometimes it will help you with the Rishonim. Sometimes it will help you understand what the concept is. Sometimes it will help you with an answer, to answer a question that you just were totally baffled by. For those of you, how many of you finished to the two dots, at least the first, the Gemara? Is there anything in particular that struck you just as really odd in something in this language? There's something one thing really odd when you're reading it in the Gemara Shach Levatari. It's not a structural thing, it's the use of a word. I don't know how many Gemaras you've seen of this particular nature. Maybe you have, but you know, when you get these binyanavs, you get the lomi zekuizeh and so on. But where do we know that you have a bracha in the Torah that the Gemara made a thing on? So one of the examples was kama tochiach. What is kama?
Green grain.
Yeah. And the pasuk is v'achal p'savata. Why does the Gemara use the term kama? Did that strike you as odd? I mean, or if I did it down funny, isn't that a really weird way to refer? It could have said chita, could have said lechem. Why did it use the term kama? Now, if you understood how the sugya was composed, that particular piece, you would understand that kama, the language, wasn't being drawn from that. You know where else you have, the Gemara says kerem and kama, right? Kerem tochiach, kerem tochiach, kama tochiach. You know where you have kerem and kama?
You have kama by
Shavuot. By what?
Shavuot.
Okay, that is true.
Damages?
What? You have it by damages. Did anybody pay careful attention to the Kiri'ah last week? That last piece was lifted from the Sigyan Bava Metzia, where they're talking about Kerem and Kama and wanting to know whether the din, those Sukkim, by the way, deal with the way almost everybody in Chazal understands, except for Isi, only a worker is allowed to eat from the produce. If you're walking through somebody's backyard, we don't postulate Isi that you can pluck an apple off the tree. Okay? But the Gemara has two psukim. One is by kerem, one is by kama. How do you know it applies to anything? Let's say you're making olives. Well, guess what? The Gemara raises that there and says, oh, olives are called kerem, except it's called kerem zayin. That entire piece was lifted from there. If you want to understand the language, it doesn't change the substance of the Gemara. But I get, every time I look at this Gemara, it's like, kama? And the answer is, well, yeah, because this piece was adapted from the Gemara Bava Metzia, that Pol Ochem on the Torah. Hence, kerem and kama are the two things. This doesn't shatter worlds. It doesn't change your understanding of everything. But it's paying attention to the parallels can often introduce an understanding of concepts to be used differently in different sugyas, that the same language actually means two different things. So I'm not perfect by any means at this either. Hopefully I will get better at it because I'm harping, you know, on this topic with you. Make it your habit when you learn a Gemara, and the source of Shas gives you the parallels. There is one very important parallel, substantively, which is going to figure in, we're not going to probably get to it today, which I think figures in very much how I think the opening sugya has to be read. Right? If you were to give in a nutshell, Boaz, you finished the Gemara? Okay, so if I'm in a nutshell, if you had to sum up in two sentences, the Gemara wants to know the source for Berachas Hanenu. Okay, so if you had to sum the sugya up from beginning to end, what would you say in two or three sentences?
From the
Arkha
of Revai,
mm-hmm.
And then in the end, it kind of gives up
in the sense, right? Exactly. Right. So your conclusion, and most will say, because it's not learned from Revai, well, that it's only, most assume it's the Rabbanan. The only brachos that are assumed to be Daraisa are A, Birchas Hamazon, only brachos on food that are assumed to be Daraisa are A, Birchas Hamazon, and B, according to some Rishon of Rashba and some others, Al Hamichya, Me'in Shalosh, it might be the rice. So, but outside of that, we usually assume the only other bracha that I can think of offhand is Birchas HaTorah, is the Raisa, but according to some, according to Pashas the Gemara, but not according to all Rishonim. And so you would tend to think that, okay, the Gemara, in other words, this was a really nice, having a lot of fun, trying to prove from Revai there's a Birchas HaNenen, and you get to the end and say, oh, well, okay. Scratch that off. You can just cross it off. It's a Svara. Right? I don't think that's actually the Maskana of the Gemara. And I think it's one of the parallels drives this point. You could figure it out internally, but I think that the parallels drive home the point that they actually do accept that, and that, I think, is going to color what the Gemara means when it gets to the end. and says Sarahi, and it answers kind of that what we say is the famous question of Pnei Yeshua. It's a fairly well known Pnei Yeshua that I've given you about this question of Sara and the power of Sara and whether Sara can render something to Oraisa. Okay, fine. So let's begin with the Mishnah. I'm happy to take anyone who wants to volunteer to read from the start.
Yeah,
then use your computer, and Ezra, take this one. This is it. Okay. All right. You don't. That's when you have to volunteer, but if you want to, you can. The cost of borrowing that cannot be seen. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Case of a Martin Alpera.
So how do you make a bracha on Peros? Now, this, what is odd about this question? What's that? Correct. And Ketzad Mevarchan al Peros assumes, if I were writing this, I would say Mevarchan al Peros. Now I would say Ketzad Mevarchan al Peros. So Tosos and all the Rishonim will sort of address that particular question, but it's worth noting it. Now, if you want the pshat answer, is that stepping in to learn almost anything is like stepping in the middle of a conversation. I think it tells you something about the nature of Talmud Torah. There's no beginning and there's no end, because it's all an ongoing dialogue. So all over Mishnayos, I mean, for example, some shiurim are doing... Correct. The Gemara asked that question in Masechta. We're not doing, most of us are not doing Masechta Shuvamos. Okay, Masechta Shuvamos. The Masechta starts with Chamesh Esrei Nashim Potros Tzoros Seim Vitzoros Tzoros Seim and Anim Machalitza Masechola. It talks about some kind of obscure case of a situation where there's no Yim Machalitza. You might have thought it would start saying the following: Misha Meis for Ein Lachem. So there's a mitzvah Yibum with a mitzvah Chalitza. So obviously the starting point, you know, so if you happen to be learning Mishnah, the thing you do is you lose the Kahati Mishnah, because he gives you really nice introductions to the Sefer. He gives you all the basic facts. But it does tell you something about kind of the mindset of Chazal, because the Gemara can give an answer here, an answer there. Oh, Meimasai Kerm, Tanahechi Kai. Oh, he was thinking about the puzzle. Some of the Rishonim could talk about it. You could try to say that here too. But I think that the Pshat answer is that if you want a different version of this, you can't learn Torah without a Rebbe, right? Because you can't sit down and learn Brachos, Meimkar Shema, the first question, Rebbe, what's Shema? Now, of course, probably you're sitting down to learn Shema, and the Mishnah, you probably already said Shema, so that, you know, you probably know Brachos. But it's like Torah is a continuous dialogue. It's not this thing where we, again, it's the difference almost between, it's one of the interesting things. My wife has observed that it would be beneficial for many Orthodox Jews, but certainly modern Orthodox Jews, to get the curriculum that Gerer and Bali Tshuva get. If you grow up from, you learn things mimetically, and you do the things you do, you know, it's like the people who put their rings in their mouth, you know, when they're washing. So if you don't know why they're doing it, sometimes they don't know why they do it, but they grew up watching that. They put it in their mouth because they take it off because it's a chatzitza. Imagine the person, the Martian, who's dropped in. Someone who's never seen this before. So, you know, they might also do the same thing. They'll put a ring in. They have no idea why do you put a ring in your mouth? They make out this about you. It's like, you know, the Rebbe who bends down. You know, they bend down, they enter the shtiebel because the Rebbe was 6'4", and in Europe the shtiebel was very low. There are all these things that we, and some of that we do. I mean, the after you wash, which makes no sense, but every culturally speaking, that's what from Jews do. So, if you grow up with it, you just kind of know what you do. It's very natural. If you don't, it's, you know, it's challenging to write it from A to Z. But if you want a methodological presentation, that's what you have to do. You have to sort of say, okay, well, so if we were teaching someone, if I was sitting out to teach someone, which could be pretty much any Talmud in the yeshiva, let's learn Masechet Shevamos. I'm not going to start out by talking about Chamesh Esrei Nashim Potros Seim. I'm going to first start talking about what the basic dinim, the basic principle of the dinim l'chalitza, the kinds of issues that we can consider, and then you can start to learn the Mishnayos. You know, the description of the ceremony of chalitza, I mean, there's no ceremony of the Yibum Mitzvah Bia. The ceremony of chalitza is the 12th parak, right? That's where you first get there. We've been talking about Holtzim and Yavnim all over the place. By the way, how do you do chalitza? It's the 12th parak, we'll tell you. So I think that is probably the shot. It's on the Baruch HaLakiros. means that you know already that you make brachas on Harris. But Tosus will, in the spirit of the Gemara, Tosus will sort of address that question. Okay. Fine. What are Harris, by the way?
Stuff that grows from the ground.
The definition of the text seems to just be a plant, like edible plant matter.
No, it's not. How do I know that that's not true?
Because Yerakot is separate from Paradigm?
Yeah, Al HaYerakos.
In the, maybe I'm misreading.
Not everything that grows from the ground that you would eat is considered Paris, is my point, in this definition. That's what Shemi's saying, because you are Paris HaElon, Al Paris HaAretz, Al HaYerakos. What's the difference between Paris HaAretz and Yerakos? So, here, how many of you have spent any time on a farm?
Not a long length of time.
One of the sad things is, and it particularly hits home with Sechas Brachos, is that we are so, this has many ramifications, we are so detached from food production, it leads us to make choices that we wouldn't make if we saw how some of our food was produced. So you literally have no idea. You just walk in. Now, if you don't, how many of you regularly do food shopping in your house? I wouldn't expect that answer to be yes either. But I do, but I didn't grow up doing it. And so if you just come to the table and stuff is prepared for you, you don't necessarily see it. So you have to understand that when you eat produce that's grown from the ground, sometimes you eat the seeds, sometimes you eat the fruit, and sometimes you eat other stuff. So when you eat lettuce, the leaves of lettuce that you eat are not the seeds. There are seeds in it, but you don't eat that part of the lettuce. That's true with a lot of stuff that grows in the ground. Pretty much anything that we consider, plants, you need seeds to grow them. I mean, there are other ways of propagating, but not typically. And therefore, peiros generally refer to either the seeds themselves or the fruit that might be around the seeds. When you eat wheat, how is the wheat, what are you eating of the wheat? What? The seeds that are in at the head of the stalk of wheat, right? The rest of it is kash, gavava. Well, that's a different issue. But you are eating only a small part of the plant. When you eat legumes, I don't know how. I assume most beans grow in a similar way. I know soybeans grow; they grow in a pot. Right? Those are the seeds. If you want more soybeans, you have to take some of the seeds that you grew and not eat them, right? In the case of pods of soy, you can eat both the green, you can eat the outer part, and you can eat the seeds. So yurakos, the peiros ha'aretz, are things like wheat, things like kidneys, things like legumes. So that's where you eat the peiros ha'aretz. Yurakos are when you eat the leaves. There might be other parts as well, but one of the classic mistakes is horseradish on Pesach. If you want to use horseradish for Pesach Amor, it's perfectly fine, provided that you're using the leaves of the horseradish, not the root. I don't know what the root is technically, botanically, what that qualifies as. I don't think it's seeds either. But if you take the leaves of radishes, of horseradish, that's bitter greensis, as I learned growing up. That's mara. So the root, should not be used for mara. Yeah.
How do you like bulbs that onions fit into this taxonomy?
They're yurakos. They are yurakos. Because again, you're not...
Is the part that you plant.
What's that?
If that is the part you put in the ground.
Yes, but there, I believe that there are seeds to that family. And in the same way that you can plant a tree, you can take a branch, mm-hmm. and you'll be able. Sometimes you can get it. The way you grow our rubber bushes is you take somebody's cuttings and you just stick them in the ground. I have an rubber bush. Someone gave me what I thought were dead things. Stuck them in the ground in the fall. I thought they were stripped and nothing in the spring. And my wife says, did you look at the base of the rubber? I said, they're propagated. It's the one huge rubber bush in the backyard. If they need the more bios to from the staff, I can provide them. I can get them more than 10. I have 10 amos, some of them might be more than 10 amos. So I don't know, it's a good question what it is. But the book, by the way, that you should know, as we're doing this particular parrot, it's not in print to the best of my knowledge. I don't know if it's been digitized and its copyright status, which should be observed. Is the late professor Yehuda Felix is at Somer Vachai Bamishna. That is probably still, I don't know of any work that has supplanted that. I'm sure you can find lots of articles on individual things, but if you're looking to identify what is a particular species, the only downside is it's only stuff in the Mishnah. So if it appears in the Braisa, Tosef, that's quoted in the Gemara, he may not have it if it doesn't appear anywhere in the Mishnah, but it's a pretty useful work. So anyway, Peiros here refer to a specific type of thing. So Peiros Ha'ilan Hu Omer. Okay, one, I don't not make a lot of these comments, but this is, by the way, the classic demonstration of the difference between Lashon Mikra and Lashon Chazal, between Biblical and Rabbinic Hebrew. The Mishnah is formulated in Rabbinic Hebrew, so are Tfilos. That's why, by the way, it's Mashiach HaRuach HaMorid HaGeshem, one of my three pet things about Tfilah. I'll just tell you them now. If you're down with them, it's Morid HaGeshem or Hatal, but you don't say Hatal, most people don't say Hatal. And it's Ushvach Acha, and it's Hatol Kilo Chalu Rachamecha, not Chalu. But the reason why it's Geshem and it's not Goshem is because it's Rabbinic Hebrew, not Biblical Hebrew, and that form doesn't exist in good Rabbinic Hebrew. How do you say a tree in Biblical Hebrew? Eitz. How do you say it in Mishnaic Hebrew?
Ilan.
What is the plural of fruit in Biblical Hebrew?
Tree.
There's no difference between the single and plural. And Rabbinic Hebrew? Peiros. Al Peiros Ha'ilan Nahu Omer. Horei Peri Ha'eitz. Because the brachos, and probably the chasimos in Shemon Esrei, brachos are Lashon Nikra, but the rest of Tima and Mishnah is Lashon Chazal. Okay. So, Peiros Ha'ilan, and what is the definition of a tree? Don't answer that question. We'll talk, it's a sugya later in the parak. We'll talk about it. It's the question of strawberries. What bracha do you make on strawberries? What bracha do you make on strawberries? But most people make adama on it. It's machlokas or rishonim. The practice is to make adama, but that depends on how you define what is a tree. Okay, next. Okay, except for wine. Now, one of the topics that is one of my pet topics that irritates me, I mean, I may be irritated at some of the rishonim, but it's going to come throughout the parak, and the Rishalmi has her, I don't know if it's on this or something very similar. Except for wine, what you make, Lori Free.
Yes.
Ronald, what bracha do you make on
wine?
Yeah. What bracha, Bore? Okay, I want to just, you know that, not everybody knows that. Sfaradim say Hagefen, Ashkenazim say Hagefen. I don't know that there's a right or wrong here. Fine, what do you say? Hagefen, yes. Our closet, sorry. What does that tell you, though, about wine? Chazal instituted a special bracha, the Gemara on Lamed Heyam Adays, our next Amud is going to talk about this. If they didn't make a special bracha, what would the bracha have been? So what does that tell you? You've changed something. Like this, everybody commits in Dishtana. You've changed something. That doesn't necessarily change its status of bracha. It's going to come up in a lot of different sugyas in the parak. If I weren't a text person, I don't know if that would be the first topic, but I'd give you six different gemaras throughout the parak and you can explore it. But that's a topic that's got to be on our minds. What happens when a substance is nishtana? What bracha do you make on Pringles? I believe Rebelsky, Sechua Bracha, said you make Adam on Pringles. I think you make Adam on Pringles. I believe that's what it says on the EU website. But in other words, some people work with the conception, it's changed, therefore. So, the simple reading of Mishnah is that just because it's changed, it doesn't change its bracha. In this case, it did, because it went from 0 to 60. It got a bari prayer, it's got its own special bracha. Similarly, go ahead. Okay, so on Peiros Ha'adama, you make bari pri Adama, that's good. Except... Now, that would you make the same ha'ara about what's that? No, this is based upon a pasuk. It's a pasuk in Baruch Inashi, Lahotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz. That's what the Gemara will talk about that. So bread is once again the same thing. Now, what's missing from the Mishnah? What?
Kama.
I'm sorry, I didn't
like it. What's, I'm not grasping the word. Kas instead of?
Kama, because we said green later on. I thought we were trying to write.
I'm sorry, kama. Havar Sodi. Sorry, that's what I was picking up. You can speak Havar Sodi, I just didn't. Shimmy?
Is that on a tackle?
All right, shahakol doesn't surprise you that it's missing.
Right.
Why? Because it's not, you don't make shahakol usually on peros ilan, you know, peros ha'adama. Where's the zonas? Now, I'm going to point... What's that?
Well,
yeah, but why is it not in the Mishnah? What bracha, if you were to read the Mishnah Peshuta, and if you were to have, let's say, chillet with barley in it, where the barley has been thoroughly cooked and it's mushed a little bit. It's not like, not eating, you know, barley cooked. You can cook barley and have it like you would have pasta. My wife makes that for Tu B'Shvat. She makes a whole thing she loves to make. And one of the things is you get, for the wheat, it's just crackers. But for the barley, she actually cooks barley in it. Very good. And that's a different story. But if you have barley in a chillet where it's already namase, it's already been somewhat dissolved, mushed, okay, and it's not easy to make up, what bracha do you make on the chillet? Nope.
You don't.
You make mazonos. You should make mazonos. If the barley, the barley on the plate, you know, which stands alone, that's actually ha'adama. Strange.
Why would you say mazonos?
Because barley is one of Chanesha's Minigadon.
Okay, but didn't say
it's all apart. No. Time out. I'm not talking about in the Mishnah. I said Lamaisa. Lamaisa, Vaisa Mishnah. But if you were to read the Mishnah, the conclusion you would reach is if you have Chanesha's Minigadon, which are all Peiros Ha'aretz, and you didn't make it into bread. So that could be, I have to be very careful because a cracker is bread. It's Pasav Abakistan, which will be one of the topics we're going to talk about. We're going to get there. All these things are going to come up. But let's say, that's why I chose a porridge, farina. No, I'm not saying oatmeal. Okay, that'll be its own share. About oats. But let's say wheat and barley and spelt. Okay, no questions there. I'll even throw rye there, the gluten grains. So if you have a non-bread thing, you would have said, I make ha'adama. Now, it's true. When I have the barley, the way cooked, and where you have each of the, you know, nice, fluffy, each of the grains there, you do make ha'adama. If you like to chew on pita, you know, maybe you might have roasted the kernels. That's not the popcorn kernel, but you like to chew on it, you make ha'adama. But even if it's a porridge, you would think based upon the Mishnah that you would make Bori Pri Adama. Because it's Peiros Ha'aretz clearly, it's not Pas. Okay. So there is a Tosefta which mentions it, but it's more famously known from Rabin Shmuel's statement, which will be a sugya that we're going to deal with. Okay. Fine. The last one is Va'al. Okay, Rabbi Huda Omer. The Shine. Okay. Now, firstly, where is Rabbi Huda coming up with that from? Forget the Sara. The Gemara will introduce the Sara. What's he thinking about? Yeah. Kotzer is Desha, Esav Mazria Zara, Eitz Peri, Osef Peri Lemino, Asher Zara Val Arts. That's, I think, undoubtedly where Desha is probably coming from. He's speaking in terms of Rafas. Now, does the Brachas booklet have anything in which you make Bori Minei D'Shai? Now, Rabbi Yehuda's Shita might strike you as quaint until you start reading sources other than things known as the Talmud Bavli. If you look in the Yerushalmi, if you look in the Tosefta, if you look in fragments of the Haggadah from the Geniza, which are probably more Eretz Yisrael, you will see that people used to make lots and lots of Brachas. Today, we live in such fear of brachos that even the brachos we're supposed to make, we don't make. You haven't seen a good friend of yours for 30 days, and you haven't spoke to them, and you haven't texted them or WhatsApped them, and so on. You see him, and you're happy to see him. You know what you're supposed to do? Make a bracha of Shechayanu B'Shem U'Malchus. If you haven't seen him for a year, you're supposed to make a bracha of Chayan Esen. If you hear a really bad piece of news, a genuine piece of bad news that you feel, it doesn't have to be relevant, so you make a Dayana Emes B'Shem U'Malchus. But you're supposed to do that, right? It's supposed to be an expression. That's, you know, today we just say Baruch Hashem. But really, brachos are, now, that's talking of brachos that we have a matzah, we have a tzura. Our halachic shita, I say our means rabbinic Jews, for the last 1,000 years, under the influence, I think, of Babel, is that we do not create our own brachos. The problem, of course, is that there are some brachos that were created post-Talmudic, like Baruch Shamar. There are a number of those. We're going to see in Bikias. Many of you daven in shul, and you have to repeat Kriya Shema. What bracha do you make when you repeat Kriya Shema? Well, many of you make Hamachil because you say it Alamita. But if you're not saying it when you're going to sleep, what bracha do you make on the Kriya Shema? You daven in shul Maariv. Okay, they daven right after Shkia. Well, you daven right after Shkia, and then you go home and they tell you, please remember to repeat Kriya Shema after such and such a time. What bracha do you make on it? Tosfos does it. Tosfos on Rush has it. The Rush has it. Some had a bracha about the Gaonim. I think Rav Amram Gaon said, Asher Kedishan Tzavet Tzavet Al Kriya Shema. I think Rabbeinu Yonah says you should make Abba Solom or Abba Solom. What does Svaradim do? They say Abba Solom night, but they also say it in the morning. Nusach, real Svarad. What bracha? What's your second bracha in the morning?
In the morning.
In the morning. Well, Avad Olam. Okay. Yeah, so that's like in Maariv, isn't that the same? Or the beginning is the same, right? Ashkenazim say Avarava. But that bracha, which is a kind of generic bracha, Birchas HaTorah, so that's what Ben Yemen says that you say. It's a shame that there's a lot of fun stuff in Kriya Shema also, that Smith this chock full of stuff that are interesting. So we have a tendency, we don't make brachas, because it's not in the Gemara. So that is a general that we do follow. But even the brachas that we're supposed to make, we don't make, because we'll be extra nisr not to be mochi shem shalom atolah. So we strip out shem amalas. I don't think that you should always do that. Sometimes I think you're really actually supposed to do it. You know, if you hear of someone who you feel, someone who's ptira, who's not your relative, you hear of someone's ptira. When I heard that Lichtenstein passed away, and I'm not really even was a Talmud, I made a bracha with Shem Malchus, and unfortunately I got it when the first day in the morning I went to Kriya, but I was wearing a shirt that wasn't suitable for Kriya. I mean, it's just a undershirt, you know, like a wicking shirt or something that wouldn't even qualify. But it's a Begizea. But the point is that you hear of something that touches it. If it's a relative of yours, let's say it's a relative of yours that you don't sit shiva for, you make a bracha, dynamis with Shem Malchus. You know, if you hear of, you know, a person killed in, you know, in a tsunami somewhere, I'm not sure that you could, I mean, depending on how it strikes you, but maybe not there, but if it's, you know, if it's a relative who's not somebody who's a sheriff, of course we make bracha with Shem Malchus. We stay away from so much in ways that we shouldn't. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda, so one of the characteristics we'll see is that they, not us, this is not a Babylonian thing, but it is an Eretz Yisrael thing, they have lots of different brachas, right? And the fact is, we don't make, you know, if we were, even the Babli, it's the Mishnah, so you can't escape that, you know, I have a simple solution to brachas. It would, of course, kill the brachas bee. Just make a shahakal and everything. The Yotze, so that would do away with the entire problem, right? Now, why do we not do that? Because there's the idea that it's a greater praise for God when we acknowledge, you know, When you say thank you, someone does a whole bunch of things for you, and you say thank you, right? You know, it might be appropriate to say thank you and talk about what you're thanking them for. So shakol niyabivar is, you know, thanks God for creating everything. Okay, that's good. Sometimes we do that, but it's more of a kavod. It's more of a shevach to talk about the individual things. So obviously, there's a limit to how far we're going to differentiate. But the Mishnah is going to give us essentially five brachos. We have a sixth bar in Amazonas, which is not in the Mishnah. But some of the Tanoim had additional brachos that they used to make. We also work with a very, in our Masechta, in the fifth parak. You have to turn back literally one page, the Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. Okay? And it says, HaOmer HaKan Sipa Yagir Rachamecha Val Tov Yizach HaShimcha Or Mod Demod Demeshach Kedoseh. So I'll just talk about the first one. Al kan sipra yirachamecha. Someone who says that we silence them. Who is saying that we would silence them? Well, if we're silencing them, it means that they are saying it out loud. Who would be saying that out loud? What? The Chazan, the Shnei Tzibur. Sitter here? I don't have a sitter here. Where in your sitter does that text appear? It doesn't appear anywhere in your sitter. So you have to understand that Chazal had certain rules for the brachos, but there was a lot of free-form composition that Chazal could add in. I think Professor Bernstein has told me that, like, HaKalir composed a lot of his piyut on the fly, which is mind-boggling. You know,
impressive.
What's that?
It's very impressive.
It's mind-boggling, but the point is, you don't have to be that good to, you know, you introduce free form, you have to say the chasimas habracha, right? It has to be baruch atah Hashem shomei tefillah. There are 18 or now 19 brachas for us. You know, the chasimas you don't change, but you can talk about different aspects of Yerushalayim. You want to talk about the Western Wall and us getting it back, you'll add into Yerushalayim. That's what the Shlich Tzibur would have done, what the Chazan would have done. So we are so it's like our shas, you know, these words in the Seder Sadaf was given at Sinai. Our Seder was in two nischos was given at Sinai, or multiple nischos. We have all a goat Mizrach in each of their things, and all Poland and Germany and Italy, you know, and the Sahari. It was all given at Sinai in its exact form. Of course, that wasn't true. There was a lot of sort of free-form conversation, but we live in a world of pretty intense, where everything has become, things have become mostly, what's the word? What? No, I don't mean it, I don't, I, that's kind of a negative connotation. They become very fixed. What's that? That's the same problem with that. What? That's probably better. That's the most, I don't know, but that's the closest way. So crystallize into a fixed form. When it really wasn't that way. In fact, we're not going to do it. We'll probably do it in Bikis, but I'll tell you this now. The Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, the Pshat, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says, Kala osa tzvilasa tachanunim, keva in tzvilasa tachanunim. If you look at the Pshat, I'm not the first one to say this in the context which it appears. They're talking about one Thomas says you make 18 brachos, one Thomas says you make the ancient esrei. Rabbi Eliezer says, Kala osa tzvilasa keva in tzvilasa tachanunim. Pshat, did you know what Rabbi Eliezer was opposing? A fixed form, of tefillah. He's not wrong. Ha'osek tefillah so keva in tzatachanun. How do most of us daven three times a day? The answer is mitzvah. Tachanun, you know, in your mitzvah kolayim, you can add it every bracha. And you can add it within brachas. But the point, and what has happened to that? What's happened to the after brachas? Yeah, right. That's what ends up happening. So we at some point in here will talk about why Rabbi Eliezer was right and why Rabbi Eliezer was wrong. In other words, he was right, and the question is, why do we not accept? If he's so right, why don't we accept his opinion? But the point is, that's what has happened in multiple ways. Ezra?
Even as far back as Rishonim, don't you already sort of, I think there's a little bit of Ashkenazi's as far as split, but like if you see like any of Rambam ever talking about Kiyot ever, he has a lot of things where he's sort of like very anti.
No, that's a different issue. The question of addition of Kiyot, but the question, by the Rambam's time anyway, the Nusach from the Rambam in Cairo, and you know, it's mostly fixed already at that particular point. But I'm not talking about adding in Kiyot. I'm talking about adding Kiyot is long expansions. I don't know what bracha was. It might have been in Shema Tila. It might have been imploring God for mercy. It's not Kiyot. It's something else. Okay. Anyway, we will pick up tomorrow with the Gemara. Any questions before we stop?